if I was worried, I'm not worried now. Because when a man is, the Bible says when a righteous man's prayers availeth much, and when Art prays for you, I figure you got nothing against you. Thank you, Art. I appreciate that. It's always an honor to speak to you. For those of you who are visiting, I'm probably not even second team, maybe third team here. Jack's out of town this weekend at a wedding for a family member, so we wish them all the best. Hope they're traveling well. Keith, it's going to be 80 degrees outside today, 85 degrees. Why are you wearing a long sleeve shirt? Well, we're babysitting a dog for one of my daughters. He's pretty good size. His name's Buddy, but it ought to be Goliath. And so we took him to the vet the other day and had to hold him down for blood tests and everything. As my contemporary brothers over 50 can testify, our forearms get pretty bad as we get older. So I'm sparing you no, I don't have a fresh tattoo. I'm sparing you the goo and gore of trying to hold down a 75-pound bulldog for 5 minutes while somebody stuck a needle in it. It's not pretty. Anyway, Jack and I discussed the possibilities of what to talk about, and you guys know I usually like to do word studies. Last time we looked at encouragement, before we've looked at unity, other things in the past. And Jack was saying, well, if you want to tie it into the reading this week, we're going to be reading through Isaiah. And I applaud all of you that are doing that reading and read through the Bible thing. I am not. I just can't commit to that. I haven't. I know I should. But I know you're reading through Isaiah. And in Isaiah, the 52nd chapter, there is what they call the servant's prayer. It starts in the 52nd chapter and the 53rd chapter. But before we get into that, I want to talk about, so we're going to be talking about service. We're going to be talking about serving, what we are as servants. Jesus' example is a servant. And we always know that we want to emulate Christ. And I say emulate, and Paul said to imitate Christ. Emulate kind of versus imitate. Well, imitate is to copy. Emulate adds a element of rivalry, okay? So we want to be as good a servant as Christ was. We want to try. Obviously, we're never going to make that. We want to try to serve Christ, serve as well as Christ served. We know, and there's examples in the book of John in the 13th chapter where Jesus actually got down on his knees and physically washed the feet of all his disciples. And so that was his example of serving. I can serve so low to do the lowliest job. And I don't know if you know what foot washing was back then, but they didn't have Nikes that covered your feet and you kick them off when you come in the door and they might be a little sweaty from the day. They walked through everything. So washing the feet was pretty disgusting job. Also in Ephesians, Paul talks about submitting to one another. That's service. Service is when we submit to each other. And he says Ephesians 5, the 21st verse, Ephesians, the 5th chapter, 21st verse, submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. And then again in Philippians, Paul talks about imitating Christ's humility. So a true servant always puts everyone else first. And that's what we want to look at today. We're going to look at Jesus' example of putting everyone else first through Isaiah's prophecy of Jesus' coming. We are selfish. Jesus was selfless. Selflessness versus selfishness. Jesus versus us. Can we become as selfless as Jesus became? The root of sin, in my mind, is selfishness. All sin, everything, you name it, robbery, murder, cheating, drinking, whatever sinning, being drunk, whatever sin it is that you're doing, comes out of your own selfishness. So if we are being selfish, we are sinning. If we are being selfless, then we're being right. So again, the week's reading was Isaiah, and I'm going to be reading it and stopping as we talk, as we go along. The 52nd chapter, if you guys want to turn there. This, I've kind of been going faster through those other scriptures, and I'll slow down for some, but these you might want to read along with me. I know sometimes I tell you don't read along with me because I just want you to hear it. In this case, let's all kind of study it together. So Isaiah, the 52nd chapter, starting in the 13th verse. This is commonly referred to as the fourth servant song. There's four servant songs in Isaiah. This is the last one. It's also the longest one. Once again, usually when we read this, we read it with a thought of it's a prophecy of Christ. Everything that we're reading in there is prophesying Christ. But in this example, we're going to read it with looking at how he is a servant. The first three verses deal with his destiny and talk about what Jesus' destiny is going to be. 13th verse. See, my servant will act wisely. He will be raised and lifted up and highly exalted. Just as there were many who were appalled at him, his appearance was so disfigured beyond that of any human being and his form marred beyond any human likeness. And that obviously is a prophecy of him being crucified and being whipped beyond recognition before he's crucified. So he will sprinkle many nations, and kings will shut their mouths because of them. For they were not told, for what they were not told, they will see, and what they have not heard, they will understand. So his destiny is to be heard of every nation. His life. The next three verses kind of deal with Jesus' life. It's a prophecy of his life, but it talks about how he's going to serve us. Who has believed our message, and to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? He grew up before him like a tender shoot and like a root out of dry ground. He had no beauty or majesty to attract us to him, nothing in his appearance that we should desire him. He was despised and rejected by mankind, a man of suffering and familiar with pain. Like one from whom people hide their faces, he was despised, and we held him in low esteem. And now, as an example of his service, we're going to look at his suffering. In the fourth verse of the 53rd chapter, I'm in the 53rd chapter now, the fourth verse. Surely he took up our pain and bore our suffering. Yet we considered him punished by God, stricken by him and afflicted. But he was pierced for our transgressions. So he took that piercing for us. That's service. He took it for us. He took on our sin. He was crushed for our iniquities. The punishment that brought us peace was on him, and by his wounds we were healed. We, all like sheep, have gone astray. Each of us has turned to our own way, and the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of all of us. Can we have that kind of servitude? Can we take on the iniquity of everyone else in the world? I can't. First of all, I'm not sinless. Second of all, I wouldn't want to. It's unbelievable. And then finally, he submitted. He was oppressed and afflicted, and yet he did not open his mouth. He was led like a lamb to the slaughter, and as sheep before its shearers is silent, so he did not open his mouth. By oppression and judgment he was taken away. Yet who of his generation protested? He was cut off from the land of the living. For the transgressions of many people he was punished. Again, the service of taking our punishment. He was assigned a grave with the wicked and with the rich in his death. We know he was buried in a new tomb owned by Joseph of Arimathea. Though he had done no violence, nor was there any deceit in his mouth. And then, of course, we get to his reward for taking this on. Yet it was the Lord's will to crush him and to cause him to suffer. And though the Lord makes his life an offering for sin, he will see his offering and prolong his days. And the will of the Lord will prosper in his hand. After he has suffered, he will see the light of life, he'll be raised up, and be satisfied by his knowledge. My righteous servant will justify many, and he will bear their iniquities. Therefore, I give him a portion among the great, and he will divide the spoils with the strong, because he poured out his life unto death, and was numbered with the transgressors. He stood with the sinners, and he bore the sin of many, and made intercession for the transgressors. So as we look at service, or service in the kingdom, and we live in the kingdom, we are in the kingdom of God at this time, we want to look at some of the early church's examples of service, and of course Jesus' examples of service as we go through this. We're going to look at three types of service: serving others in the church, serving others' physical needs, and serving others' spiritual needs. In Romans, the 16th chapter, I say Paul. We don't actually say it was Paul that wrote Romans, but when you read this verse, it just sounds so much like all the other letters that he wrote. But I'm in Romans 16, verses 1 and 2. He's starting to conclude the letter, and so he's starting his salutations. He says, I commend to you our sister Phoebe, a deacon or a deaconess, which means a servant, okay? We often misconstrue that word. I hate to say this, but sometimes we think deacons are junior elders. It's a totally separate thought process. A deacon is to serve the church, and in this case, this was a lady that was called a deaconess, and she was in the church at Caesarea. I ask you to receive her in the Lord in a way worthy of his people, and to give her help, give her any help she may need from you. She has been a benefactor for many people. So we're to serve each other in the church. Also in 1 Corinthians, the 9th chapter, and we all know the verse very well. It's several verses. I won't read it. But Paul talks about, and you can read it on your own, it's 1 Corinthians 9, 19 through 23. Paul talks about becoming all things to all men. You know, he when he was with the Jews, he behaved like a Jew. When he was with the Gentiles, he behaved like a Gentile, so that he could correspond with them and build a rapport with them. Not that he sacrificed any of his beliefs. He just became like them so that he could help them in their spirituality. And again, in 1 Corinthians, there's an example of the household of Stephanas. I'm in the 16th chapter, the 15th verse and following. 1 Corinthians 16, verse 15. I don't know how far I'll go. Oh, probably just 15 and 16. You know that the household of Stephanas were the first converts in Achaia, and they have devoted themselves to the service of the Lord's people. I urge you, brothers and sisters, to submit to such people and to everyone who joins in the works and labors at it. Isn't that an interesting concept? So Stephanas' household became servants, and they served the church. We have people here like that. We have families here that family just serves the church, and you don't see it all the time because it's behind the scenes. And now they're going to this new place, and he's saying, I want you to serve them like they serve us. So if everybody's, it gets back to that concept. If everybody's trying to serve everybody else, see, there's no selfishness there. We're all becoming more like Jesus. In Galatians chapter 5, verse 13, Paul says, my brothers and sisters, we are called to be free, but do not use your freedom to indulge in flesh. Rather, serve one another humbly and in love. So we have several examples scripturally where we're to be serving each other within the church. We're also called upon to serve each other's physical needs. Again, I talk about, and I won't read it, but I talk about Jesus physically washing the feet of his disciples. In Acts chapter 6, verses 1 through 4, we see an example of the choosing of deacons. Why don't we can go ahead and turn to that one. Give me just a second. I know you guys think I'm sitting back there texting, but I really am following. I know a lot of you are too. A lot of people think we're sitting here texting during church, but we're actually following along on our phones. So I'm going to Acts 6, verse 1. In those days when the number of disciples was increasing, the Hellenistic Jews among them complained that the Hebraic Jews, because of their widows, were being overlooked in the daily distribution of food. So you got one nationality, I'll use that loosely, saying that, hey, our widows aren't getting the right food distribution because this other nationality is taking care of itself. Does that sound familiar? Do we have those kind of issues in our society today? So the 12 gathered all the disciples together and said, it would not be right for us to neglect the ministry of the Word of God in order to wait tables. So what they're saying is, you know, we're the elders here. We've got to take care of the spiritual needs, but we need somebody to help us with the physical needs. Brothers and sisters, you choose, it doesn't say you, but he's telling them, brothers and sisters, choose 7 men from among you who are known to be full of the Spirit and wisdom. We will turn this responsibility over to them and give our attention to prayer and the ministry of the Word. So we have an example of the church actually setting up a situation to see that everyone within the church is physically fed every day. And we know that today, like, for example, we have our food pantry here. And that's set up specifically to see that people's food needs are met. And not just people within this congregation, but people within the whole county. And, you know, we love to let other people do stuff for us. And we have to be very careful with that because we can't proxy our service off with money. But what I mean by that is a lot of times, and admit, you know, and you guys, I hope you understand, when I'm preaching up here, I'm preaching myself first and then to you guys. So don't think that I'm not guilty of this. We sit there and we think, okay, well, I put money in, so that gives money for the food bank and those other guys take care of it and that's okay. And I'm not saying we all have to work the food bank, but I'm saying we all have to physically serve others. You can't use your money as a proxy or a substitute for your own service. And I know many of us are doing things behind the scenes all the time, taking care of family members, taking care of other people in the neighborhoods and in the community, making sure that people are fed, and we never say a word about it. And so that's the type of thing that we have to do. I just hope that we all understand that our giving doesn't stop at that plate. Our giving means our service also. In Acts, the 9th chapter, it talks about Tabitha. And you remember Tabitha was she sewed clothes, she took care of everybody, she was a very important person in their congregation, and she died. She got sick and she died. And it was so important to them that they were crying and they were around her and they didn't know what they were going to do without her. And Peter came in and went into the upper room to see what it was all about and found her there dead. And he asked them all to leave and raised her from the dead. Raised her from the dead. Because it was so important that she be there to help and serve them. In Philemon, there's an example of service within the church, physical service, where Paul, he's actually sending Onesimus. Every time I have to think about the pronunciation, he's sending Onesimus back to Philemon. And actually, Philemon, Onesimus is a slave to Philemon. And what Paul's doing, he says, I'll read it to you. I'm reading from the 12th verse. Notice I didn't give a chapter because Philemon is so short, it's only one chapter. So I'm Philemon, verse 12. I am sending him who is my very heart back to you. I would like to keep him with me so that he could take your place in helping me while I am in chains for the gospel. So this guy is so important to Paul because, see, back then, if you were put in jail, you didn't eat if somebody didn't bring you food. So this guy's taking care of Paul, but he has to send him back to Philemon. And it goes on through the book. He's really convincing Philemon that this guy is a Christian and you don't need to be, he doesn't need to be your slave. You need to set him free and take him as your equal. Let's turn to Matthew chapter 14 for another example of meeting people's physical needs. It wouldn't be complete if we didn't have an example where Jesus did it. Matthew chapter 14, verse 13 is where I'm going to start, I think. We'll see when I get there. Oops, I went to Mark. Excuse me. Give me a second. So this picks up right after the execution of John the Baptist. Without going into too much detail because the kids are here, but you know, John the Baptist was executed in an almost sports-like manner for someone's pleasure and benefit. And we know he was Jesus' cousin. So Jesus had just found out that his cousin had been executed by Herod. I'm picking up in verse 13. When Jesus heard what had happened, he withdrew by boat privately to a solitary place. Hearing this, the crowds followed him on foot from the towns. When Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them, and he healed the sick. As evening approached, the disciples came to him and said, "This is a remote place, and it's already getting late. Send the crowds away so they can go to the villages and buy themselves some food." Excuse me. Jesus replied, "They do not need to go away. You give them something to eat." And the disciples replied, "We only have 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish, they answered. "Bring them here to me," he said. And he directed the people to sit down on the grass. Taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, and looking up into heaven, he gave thanks and broke the loaves, and then he gave it to the disciples, and we all know the rest. Excuse me, he fed the 5,000. The point of that is, if you just found out your cousin was dead, and you'd been preaching all day, and you were tired, and you'd intentionally gone off to try and kind of be alone, but you have so much compassion that it's not what you want, it's not that I'm tired, it's not that I'm in mourning, these people are hungry and I have to feed them. Now, of course, we're not going to break 5 loaves, 5 loaves and 2 fish and feed 5,000. He did that miraculously. But sometimes we have to serve even when we don't feel like serving. And I battled with this in my mind telling you this story, but I think it exercises the point. And I by all means, I don't want you to consider it me boasting about something that I did, but it taught me a lesson, and I'm going to convey it to you for the purpose of teaching you a lesson. Boy, it sounds like when I'm talking to my kids, I'm going to teach you a lesson. It was a hot summer day, and most of you know, most of the time I work in Piketon. It was probably 2012, 2013, probably one of the hottest days of the year. And there's a stretch of road between Piketon and Waverly. Some of you may know it. I call it the Bottoms. It's just nothing but bottom land and farming land. And so when you leave the village of Piketon until you get to Walmart in Waverly, there is nothing. Nothing at all. And I'm driving along into Waverly at lunchtime. I'm taking a lunch break. And I see this lady off to the side of the road, and she's got a girl with her. I figure the girl's 10 or 12 years old, and the car's off to the side of the road. And I'm like, this is not good. This kid cannot be out in this heat. And this lady was up in years, and she was not in good shape, physically appearing. And so I think I went down through the median, I cut around, came back, and I pulled up behind her. And I said, hey, what you got going? She said, I'm out of gas. I said, oh, that's bad. She said, yeah, the gauge doesn't work. I thought I had it timed. Anyway, I ran out of gas, so I don't know what to do. And at the time, I had that big Mercury that I used to drive. So I said, well, hop in the car with me. We'll drive up there. We'll get you some gas at the gas station. They probably got a loaner can, and I'll bring you back down here. I can't do that. I said, well, I need to help you get some gas. I'll buy the gas. That's okay. Don't worry about it. She says, I can't get in the car with you. And I said, well, you and the girl don't have any water. I don't have any water with me, and you're out here in this heat. You just need to get in the car with me. And so here's what I'm thinking, right? I'm driving a car. I've got the name of my company on the front of my shirt. You know, I'm thinking I'm just some great-looking guy, and she's seeing some guy that's going to harm her granddaughter, you know. And so she couldn't get in the car with me. And it annoyed me because I wanted to help her, but I wanted to help her my way, which was take her into town, do the business I had to do, bring her back with the gas can, and get going. She said, no, I can't get in the car with you. I said, okay, well, I don't know what I can do. So I got back in the car, I drove off, and I'm not going to leave her. So I drive to the first gas station. I think back then it was a Shell station. And I'm still thinking, you know, I got my name on my shirt. The mayor of Piketon works for the same company I do. Everybody knows who I am. What? So I go into the gas station. I say, hey, you guys got a gas can I can borrow? No. You got one I can buy? No. You got to go across to Walmart. Okay. So I go over to Walmart. And, you know, nothing in Walmart is by the front door except gum and soda pop, right? So I got to go all the way to the back, and I grab this gas can, come back up front. I don't know what it was, 8, 12 bucks, who cares? And I buy this gas can, so now I got to go back across the street, fill it up with gas, put it in the back of my car, and it's smelling up the car, which I didn't really like, and go back down there, all the time not knowing she might already be gone or the guy may be there, or, you know, the tow truck may be there. So I see her off there, and she's still there, and everything's alone, and I pass the place and hit the turnaround. Well, as I hit the turnaround, I see the sheriff behind me, and he changes lanes. That's not a legal turnaround, okay? You don't just, in case you guys don't know that, you don't, those little turnarounds, those are for the police. They're not for you. So I went through the turnaround, and he followed me through it. And I'm like, oh, yes, I'm going to get a ticket for this. So I pull over, and I pull up behind her. And he gets out of the car, and as I'm walking back to the trunk, I pop the trunk and I let him see it open, you know, because I'm from LA. You don't hide anything. Let him see the trunk open. I reach in and I pull out the gas can. He's like, what are you doing? I said, well, this lady's out of gas. And I kind of give him the short version of that story. I said, he goes, oh, okay. He goes, well, I got the lights on. Let's go up there and put the gas in. So we go up there and we put the gas in. And she whizzes around, and anyway, it finally starts, and we put the gas can in her car. I said, here, you need it more than me, and I don't want it stinking up my car. And he thanked me and said he wished there was more people like me. You know, okay, I appreciate it. Didn't write me a ticket, and we all drove off. What's your point, preacher? Well, the point is, that wasn't the way I wanted to help her, you know? But sometimes you just have to help people the way they want to be helped. And she was understanding her fear that she didn't know who I was and protecting her young daughter and herself, I guess. I'm just imagining she was fearing for her granddaughter or daughter. And so I had to help her the way she wanted to be helped. Now, that's not always true. Our kids grew up out in L.A. working. And they worked the Saturday feed. We our church, there was a, so I'm going into another story to to show the other side of it. So every Saturday, there was a guy who had a catering company, and he'd have leftovers, and then we'd buy others to supplement, and we would feed the homeless lunch at 1 o'clock. So they could come at 1 o'clock, and they could come in and get dinner, and that would help them out. And we also had a clothes pantry or a clothes closet where they could change out an outfit. Now, in that case, we had to help them the way we have to help them. Much like in the food pantry here, there has to be rules because we're helping people and we have to help them a certain way so that it's fair to everyone. For example, we wanted to give a lesson every Sunday or every Saturday at 1 o'clock. So the rule was you could come in and you could eat, but you had to be quiet while we gave the lesson. You didn't have to participate. It wasn't one of those things, you know, hey, come in here and sit down, listen to the lesson, and then you'll get a free meal. No, you could eat. You didn't have to pay attention, but you had to be quiet so everybody else could talk. As time went by, we made some other rules. You can't have any to-go plates. Well, there were several reasons for not having to-go plates. First of all, you're trying to get out of the lesson. You just want the food and go. It's kind of, okay, we get that. But we don't control what you got in that food container. So if we give you a bunch of food and you leave out here on Sunday and decide you're going to eat it on Tuesday and Wednesday, that's not good. We're not going to let you get sick and then, you know, point the finger. We had to kind of protect the church a little bit. And then we noticed with the clothes closet, the rule was you come in, you can shed your garments, you can put on, you know, find yourself something new that fits, a new top, new shirt, a new pants, new shoes. We didn't get into undergarments, just overgarments. And you could change that out. Only one. Because, you know, I saw a guy walk out of there one time with 5 sets of Levi's. 5 pairs of good Levi's jeans. And he walked out and he put them in his van and came back out to eat. Well, those are going to the swap meet. That wasn't the purpose of the service that we were doing. So my point is sometimes we have to serve people in a way that we don't want to, but other times, hey, we do have to set limits. Just like here. You know, there's limits here to how much you can have at the food pantry because we have to be able to have enough to serve everyone. Aside from our physical needs, we have to serve each other's spiritual needs. Wow, time goes fast, doesn't it? Let's look at Ephesians 4. Verse 11 through 16. So Christ himself gave the apostles, the prophets, evangelists, pastors, and teachers to equip his people for works of service, so that the body of Christ may be built up. So we have these people here, and Christ wants us to have this so that we can use each other to build each other's spiritual needs. In Colossians, the 4th chapter, in the 10th through the 12th verse, we have Epaphras. And Epaphras, he was a prayer warrior. That's what we call a prayer warrior. And a lot of times our spiritual service is mostly about prayer. You know, yes, we can talk to people. Yes, we can counsel people. Yes, we can study the Bible with people. But a lot of times our spiritual service, and so when I say spiritual service to help others' spiritual needs, I'm talking about prayer. And I am moving rather quickly now because the time did get away from me. So I'm moving to John chapter 17, and that's probably one of my favorite chapters in the whole Bible, beginning in verse 9. So once again, like I told you about Jesus, when he was feeding the 5,000, when he had rather been praying and worrying about his cousin who had just been beheaded, here again, he's in the Garden of Gethsemane, and it's the night before he's going to be executed. Now, nobody else knows it, but he knows it. He knows he's going to be executed. And what's he doing in the 9th verse? I pray for them. I am not praying for the world, but for those you have given me, for they are yours. And then I skip down to the 20th verse. My prayer is not for them alone. I pray for also for those who believe in me through their message. That's us. He's praying for us on the night before he's going to be executed. He's not praying, Lord, don't make me have to be executed. Lord, send an army down here to help me escape. Lord, I want to get out of this any way I can. He's praying for us when he should be worrying about himself, when we would be worrying about ourselves. So when we think about spiritual needs, we need to be thinking about our prayer and our prayer life and praying for each other's spiritual needs. So as we can see through the lesson, service is the only way to achieve greatness. If we strive to be great, we're not going to be great. But if we strive to serve like Jesus strove to serve, then that's going to raise us up in greatness. I'm going to read one or two last verses before we quit. Let's go to Mark 9. Starting in the 33rd verse. They came to Capernaum. When he was in the house, he asked them. So they'd been on the road, and they arrived at Capernaum. When he was in the house, he asked them, "What were you arguing about on the road?" That's Jesus asking, since I didn't set it up. But they kept quiet because on the way they had argued at who was the greatest. They knew he wouldn't like that. Sitting down, Jesus called the 12 and said, "Anyone who wants to be first must be the very last and the servant of all." He took a child whom he placed among them. Taking the child in his arms, he said to them, "Whoever welcomes one of these little children in my name, and whoever welcomes me does not welcome me, but the one who sent me." So if we want to be great in the kingdom and great in the Lord, in the kingdom of God, we have to lower ourselves and be the servant to all like he was. And I just want to take a second to talk about some humanistic kind of thought processes that fall into that. Our motivation needs to be not that I'm serving to become great, but I'm serving because the person needs the service. And we hear a lot of phrases like paying it forward or karma. And those phrases are not terms that are biblical, okay? If we think, and I know there's different meanings for paying it forward, but if we think paying it forward is we're doing good now because we're expecting good in return later, or even we're doing good now because we're expecting good later for our descendants, there's a problem with that, okay? If we think karma, literally, it's a phrase from another religion, Hindu, more specific Buddhism. And it basically translates what goes around comes around. We all know that. So if I do good, I'm going to get good in return. If I do bad, I'm going to get bad in return. That's not scriptural. The sense of fairness that we live with in our lives, oh, everything needs to be fair, needs to be equal, needs to be balanced. Seinfeld called it Even Steven. Remember the Even Steven episode? So those are not biblical terms. Yes, we're going to receive a reward, but it's not a reward. We're not guaranteed any kind of reward for our service on this earth. Okay? We can be the best servants we ever wanted to be and still suffer loss, still suffer hurt. The promise is that reward in heaven. And even then, if we're serving, and I know we are, I am, serving out of an expectation to receive a reward in heaven, that's not even right either. We need to be serving for serving's sake. We need to serve like Jesus served. He served expecting nothing in return. So be careful of these pay it forward concepts or this what goes around comes around. Because if you're serving expecting something physical in return on this earth, that's not a promise that I see anywhere in the scriptures. Finally, in Luke, the 22nd chapter, He basically says, if you want to be the greatest, this is Jesus talking, and I'm not quoting exactly, I'm paraphrasing. If you want to be the greatest, you have to be like the youngest. So back then, the youngest was the one that got kicked around. He was the servant. Now we have a lot more respect for our children than even some of our, maybe not our forefathers, but back even 150 years ago. But the youngest was usually the servant. And if you want to be the greatest, you got to be like that. So as always, when we come to the conclusion of our lesson, if you're wanting to serve God and you're wanting to serve Him in a more formal and permanent fashion and give your life to Him, we're going to have, Wes is going to sing a song of invitation, and you can come up during that time. One of the elders and I will meet with you, or I and one of the elders will meet with you, and we'll talk about that. If you're ready, we can baptize you right now. If you're thinking that you haven't been serving the way you should be serving, I hope we're all thinking that, because I know I'm not serving the way I should be serving. But if you have a need that you want to express that in public, we can do that. We can pray for you. But I tell you, this hymn of invitation is a custom. It's not a requirement in the Bible. And if you want to get with one of the elders after service because you're a little too humble to come up here in the front or a little too afraid to come up here in the front, that's perfectly acceptable. If you want to get with me, if you want to get with any other person in this congregation that you see as a spiritual leader or a spiritual stronghold, get with them. Pray with them. Let them pray with you. If they think you need to elevate it to the elders are here to help you. So you're welcome to come forward if you want to, but you don't have to, but you have to do something if you need to. So why don't you join me as we stand and sing.